podcast. So far, the first two episodes have focused on Major General Gina Sabrick's priorities for the 10th Air Force. We've talked about her priorities to drive readiness and develop elite airmen. And continuing with that theme, we're welcoming back General Sabrick and Command Chief Master Sergeant Christopher Bluto, as well as a very special guest to talk about her final priority, innovate. General Sabrick, you tell your airmen, don't just think outside the box. Throw the box away. Ask yourself, is this the best way to do this? And how can we do this better? Don't be afraid of failure. We must find new ways of optimizing our internal processes and promoting innovation to effectively maximize costs and mission capabilities. We must better achieve combat power and transform for the future. General Sabrick, can you start by explaining what you mean by innovate and why it is a priority for the 10th Air Force?
You bet. Thanks. When we talk about the priorities of 10th, when we talk about innovation, you know, if you look at the definition of innovation itself, right, it says create something new, improve on an existing process, idea, or the way we do things. We have to continually do this. Our Air Force is the most lethal combat forces in the entire world. We need to continually evolve and innovate to get better. What we did in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and even yesterday, to be honest, isn't going to be enough for the future fight. So what we need to do is continually question and continually make, you know, things better, processes better. One of the things I always go when I go into a new unit is ask, hey, is this the best way we've done this? Or why do we do it this way? And most of the time the answer is, well, ma'am, this is the way we've always done it. That's not the answer, right? If that's the answer because we've tried every other way and this really is the best answer, that's awesome. But if it's not, what we need to do, like you just said, is think outside the box, you know, make sure we're trying new things. You know, don't be afraid to try something and fail. So we've got to continually say, how do we make it better? How do we make it more lethal? And that's kind of the point of the priority.
Chief Bluto, could you elaborate on how the 10th Air Force is fostering that innovative environment?
Absolutely, Chris. Thanks. I think that we foster the innovation through a couple of different methods, and I'll hit on a few right now. So first and foremost, one of the things the boss and I just witnessed and got briefed on. So the 944th has created a mission-capable airman academy, soon to be known as the Mission-Ready Airman Academy, where we are preparing airmen, mostly in the four arena, to be able to support each other with different functions in austere environments without touch, without reach back or touching, or the ability to get resupplied. So they are learning each other's jobs. They are learning to survive and thrive in the field to make us more lethal, like the boss talked about. I'll tell you a couple others, right? So the 920th Rescue Wing, specifically the 943rd, has done a couple things to lean forward and innovate, right? So the rescue defenders out there went through DRMO, sprint, and found kit to build themselves, all kit to be able to go out in the field and retrain themselves as rescue defenders. Completely innovative, led by the squadron commander and the SDL that was out there. Then when you get on the flying side, they mounted, they created a mount for two M240s to be mounted on the side of the helicopter to increase their lethality and support when they are on the ground. They also created a way to take the 50 cal and be able to remove that from the aircraft, mount it on a ground-based mount to be able to help survivability on the ground as well. Things that have not been done before. So they're thinking not just outside the box, they're throwing that box away and making us more and more lethal, like the boss talked about.
General Sabrick, he gave some pretty good examples. I understand you have an example, too, you'd like to tell us about.
Absolutely. That's who our special guest is today. So we have with us today Tech Sergeant Jeremy Vickers from the 307th Bomb Wing. He identified a significant problem with the maintenance stands for B-52 engines and developed an innovative solution that's greatly improved safety and efficiency. His story is the perfect example of what we mean by innovation and thinking beyond conventional methods. Tech Sergeant Vickers, I was wondering if you could share a little bit of your story, where it came from, what kind of motivated you to do this, and kind of where did you get to it?
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me as a guest today. I don't really know how to start. Basically, you just go out and have a problem and you get a little bit pissed off. And
yes.
And it's you take a step from there. We're dealing with you know, equipment that it's good equipment, but it's not designed specifically for what we do. So I was just having a day when I was using that equipment, and you know, I kind of stepped back and had a moment of anger, and I was like, this is not going to work. We got to do something different. The biggest thing is the survivability of the equipment, the use of the equipment, and how it would better serve the airmen working on the airplane? How could it be safer? How could it be faster? How could it be more convenient? How could it make work life better? And how could it keep me from getting angry every day? So I basically started with a pencil, a tape measure, and a piece of paper, and just had a vision in my mind. And I drew out some blueprints and started hunting for companies. So that's where the creation came from.
So let me ask you a question. When you started this, when you started your pen to paper and you brought it to your supervisors, what was the reaction?
Initially, they were like, that's awesome, but it'll never happen. I'm like, that's the wrong thing to tell me. You think I'm going to stop right here and come in this office and you say it's never going to happen, I'm just going to go away? That doesn't work for me. So I sat down and I hand drew a full set of blueprints with measurements, the whole nine yards, the movements, everything I needed. I looked through ANSI, AFOSH, OSHA, the best I could, and tried to identify everything. So at that point, I found about five companies that I thought could build this for me. I sent my blueprints out. Two of the companies never responded. Two of the companies basically sent me back their link to their cookie cutter stands that I'd already looked at. And they weren't going to work. And I see these stands that get bought. Money gets wasted on these stands. And they're sitting out behind somebody's hangar because they don't work. They don't work for what we need. So I don't want to do that. And the last company, Fabrication Authorities, the guy called me. I answered the phone. It was a number out of Florida. I didn't know who it was. I answered the phone. He said, hey, my name's Michael Totten. I'm with Fabrication Authorities. I'm looking at your blueprints. I have some questions. Do you have a few minutes? And I said, this is my guy. Furthermore, into the conversation, I found out he was also a former Marine. So now we speak the same language. And so we got into it from there. And for about 2 months, we went back and forth. He actually helped me out a lot with the safety part of it. There was a lot of things that I missed, just details that have to be there. So he would call me and say, hey, you know, we got this safety thing. It's got to be this way. We have to change this or this. What do you want to do? So I would, you know, measure and draw out some more. I'm like, well, let's do it this way. So we finally settled on a print and we both liked it and went over it and thought it was workable. And that's when I presented it to the Air Force. So I went back to my supervisor and I laid all the prints out on the table. And they were like, you're still working on this? I'm like, yeah, I've been working on this and I'm not going to stop working on this. So I need to know what the next step is. He said, well, I guess we need to introduce this to the commander. So, and it went from there, and it was a long process, but every commander that I had during the process was on board. They all liked it. All the chiefs, QA, safety, everybody liked it. It's just pushing through the red tape and staying with it, figuring out what funding you can use to get it paid for. Sometimes you get the funding or you get almost approved for the funding, and then the funding just goes away because they take it somewhere else because you didn't have your name quite on it yet, and then you got to start over. And that is really discouraging. But like I said, I don't quit. I don't really like being told no when it's something that's needed. So I'll just find a different direction.
So you clearly found a different direction. I love the fact that you don't take no for an answer. You seem to be a how do I get to a yes kind of guy. So you got to a yes.
Yes, ma'am. Actually, I got to a yes and then COVID hit. So that yes turned into a no.
How long have you been working on this?
I introduced it to the Air Force in September of 2018.
Okay.
Not as long as I thought, actually.
But still a long time.
Throwing COVID in there.
Right. So
when you say introduced to the Air Force, you mean your first line supervisors at that point in time?
My commander.
Okay, got it.
Basically, early part of September 2018 is when I asked my commander if it was possible.
When did you put pencil to paper?
Oh, that was probably April, May of 2018, because like I said, I drew it out, found the company. Me and the guy at the company went back and forth on it. and then we settled on a print that was doable, that met all the standards. And that's really what I wanted to do before I went in and introduced it to the commander. I understand that, you know, when I walked in my supervisor's office with a hand sketched print, and they looked at it like, you're not there. You're not bringing anything but a piece of paper with a pencil mark on it. So it's like, I need to show interest, and I need to show drive, and I need to show dedication to this project. So I'm going to walk in his office, and when he asks me a question, I'm going to say, yes, sir, it is.
And I'll tell you, that's great. One, that you started that way. Two, you didn't stop. And in our world, man, literally some of the most innovative changes have started out drawn on a bar napkin. Like quite literally. And then we graduate from that a little bit into a whiteboard. If you walked into the boss's office right now, we would see two whiteboards full. Then we would have butcher paper stuck to the walls like you would see in a strategic alignment, strategic offsite. No kidding, there's probably seven in there right now.
Yep.
Minimum. So we start the exact same way as you did. And I'll tell you, we sometimes refer to them as the masters of no. Even at our level, we run into no's, but we don't stop. The boss's thing is, and I will keep pressing until I find the person that has the authority to actually tell me no. Turns out she has a lot less of those than I might.
Correct.
But that still happens, even at our level.
So let me ask you a question. So you were successful. Granted, it took a little from your barn act begin to where we are today. You were successful. What advice would you give to a young airman sitting in your seat of how to innovate and how to get to yes?
Just not to quit. That's the main thing, is not to quit. When you get told no, my experience is when you get told no, most of the times because you didn't bring enough information, or you didn't present it right, or you didn't say the right word. There's several things it could be, but normally it's something small. And maybe you need to step back and look at it again. What's a better way I can present this? Or we need this. How can I better make them understand that we need this? But the biggest thing is just not to quit. Over and over and over again, somebody says no, and their shoulders drop, and their heads drop, and they turn around, walk out, and they're like, I guess we'll still do it the old way.
Which, as we all know, is probably not the optimal way, right? We've got to evolve. We got to get better.
Yes, ma'am. Most of the time, sometimes the old way is the best way because it's all been done before.
You bet. Agreed.
But a lot of times there is a better way, or a way you can make the old way a little better. It's not necessarily just you can still do it the old way, just shape it up a little bit.
Yep.
It comes right back to the definition, right? The boss level of what innovation is. Change what is already in place to make it more efficient, to make it better. There are three answers that the boss and I, when we sit down with Aaron, when we talk about how things are going, if they feel like they're getting supported to innovate, right? Which is the third priority. There's three answers that we get a lot of times that none of them are our favorites, and we try to bust through the barriers for this. One, we've always done it this way. We've never done it that way, or we've already tried that. It didn't work. Right? So we hear those more often than we would like, and we encourage all the time to power through those, to give you the opportunity to try. Nobody cares if we fail, right? Fail forward would be a saying that we talk about. Let's try something different to make it better, and if we fail, we'll start to try again.
Well, that's my personal opinion is you can't succeed unless you fail.
Agreed.
It's really how you fail, how you're going to succeed or not succeed. And I talk to our young airmen. We're a training unit, so we have active duty airmen cycling in, and I talk to them. A lot of times they'll come in and they'll say, we can't do it this way. Well, I know how to do it, but I want them to figure out how to do it. And a lot of times, believe it or not, somebody's been in the Air Force less than a year, something might fall out of their mouth that you never thought of. So I don't discourage, you know, most of the time I'll ask them, I'm like, well, what went wrong? Why couldn't you do it? Where's the hold up? So I make them think a little bit before I just give them the answer. And I listen too, because like I said, something genius may fall out of their mouth and they don't even know it.
Even, I think even bigger than that, right? One of the things that we have to continually remember as a reservist, right? So citizen airmen choose to serve in a uniform at different points in their life. Some of them are just wanting to give back, and they come in as wildly successful in industry already. So they are coming with tactics, techniques, procedures, processes that we may not have thought about from an industry side that will make our lives significantly better because they know it and they've lived it. So, and a couple times I've had to remind myself that just because someone's an airman doesn't mean anything about what they bring from a capability and a knowledge standpoint.
And I think, right, when we talk about innovation, we're kind of always talking about like people like you who actually took the idea and go. I think what's just as important is the point you had brought up earlier is that the supervisors need to be open to it, right? Innovation's going to go nowhere if it gets stifled. So when that young airman comes and brings an idea, we who have all been in for a while and have seen a lot of things have to be able to be open to say, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's explore it kind of deal. What I think the worst thing we can do is have, you know, young, eager airmen who are like, hey, why don't we try this? And you're right. Some of this might be, hey, been there, done that, seen it. Let them figure it out by themselves. But the other avenue might be they think differently than we do. And we've got to capitalize on different thoughts and kind of different schools of, hey, I've been thinking about it a different way. Let me see if it'll work.
There's some great things I think that we do in the math. And I'll specifically point out the 442nd filing right now. So they have an innovation cell, an innovation lab where they are able, they encourage people to come and bring their ideas and flesh them out. And I'll tell you, the previous one came in, I don't think it's been done since General Nestor left, but General Nestor, when he was in the seat, it was almost like a competition. And the ones that were the most fleshed out and going to be the most effective, they funded as a wing. He set aside and prioritized funding to make these ideas happen, to help encourage that innovative thought and execution. I think it's a fantastic way to approach business.
Yep.
Yeah, Global Strike has kind of the same thing. Their innovation guys are down in the office talking to me the other day. They're trying to work on a new drag sheet stand, and they were kicking around ideas. And he's like, hey, we heard you did this, you know. So we just kicked ideas back and forth. And he left with three or four more bar napkins.
Good.
So kind of interested to talk to him again, see how it works out.
I feel like we may need to send you home with some big whiteboards so you can get out of the bar napkin business and start going to the big whiteboards and big pieces of sticky paper.
Yeah. And a minute ago, I want to clarify something. A minute ago, you said about my supervisors need to be more open. My supervisor, when I took the idea and he said it'll never happen, he was very supportive. He knew I wasn't going to quit. I mean, we've known each other for a long time, so he knew I wasn't going to quit. He just said, don't get your hopes up. But he knew he was going to see me again. And he also said, I'll push as much as you need me to push. I'll help as much as I can. I'll do anything I can to help get this through, but you need more.
Mm-hmm.
So, it wasn't that he was not being supportive. He was just being realistic in his experience. And like I said, I don't really live in a past experience. I want to move forward. And no is not the way to move forward.
I'm with you. How do you get to yes?
So you burned through a lot of napkins to make this thing. And yes. You didn't take no for an answer. You didn't give up. What was it like the first time you saw this thing, this stand being put to use?
Oh, it was that just happened not too long ago. I had to make three trips down to Florida during the construction.
Well, I appreciate your sacrifice.
I had to spend a week in Clearwater, Florida.
Oh,
it was terrible. actually, I didn't. All I saw was inside of a fab shop. The last trip down there. And I had talked to these guys so much, and I'd been down there and developed a relationship, so you kind of joke and stuff like that. But the first trip down, we were having a problem with the geometry of the scissors and the lift. It was going to push against itself, so we had to work through that. And these are problems that I really expected. Something that's totally designed from the ground up, I expected to have problems with. And I talked to our chief and our commander and kind of explained, and they were like, yeah, absolutely, that's going to be perfect first time. So, second time I go down and can't remember what the problem was the second time, but we ended up working through that. And the second time I went down is when I really started seeing it come together. The first time I went down, we were having issues. and it was still in the infancy, and there were still parts just everywhere. The second time is when some of the parts were together and you can see it taking shape. And that's when I got a little excited. I was like, this is actually happening. This I can touch it. There it is. And the third time is when I went down, we were having some issues with the hydraulics. And I got to spend two full days with Hercules Hydraulics, who were fabulous. And their guys in the back were, I mean, just unbelievable knowledge with the way hydraulics work. I have an overview. I understand how hydraulics work. Their guys are like, well, it's this much for this much with this pressure and this formula and this. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I need this to go up and down. So we worked through that, and we got it all done, and got it hooked up. And then I see my stand raise up and down on its own, and I was like, there it is. So, but they still had to tear it all back apart and powder coat it and make it look all pretty and everything. But I saw it work. So, but I was that trip, we finished up and we got it. And I was flying out Saturday morning. I was flying back, and we finished up and got everything moving Friday morning. So it's like, I got a half day off. So most of the time I was there when they opened, and I was usually there after they closed. I'm like, I got 5 days to come down here and work. So they would stay late. I would stay late. We would get through it. So yes, yeah, it's a lot of work. It's, you know, it's work that I enjoy, because I enjoy seeing results. I enjoy having my hands on something that came from nothing, and it is what it is now. So, and everybody's using it. I mean, I'm getting great feedback from it. There's a couple of things that I need to address, a couple of things that I would like to upgrade a little bit. But overall, they work fantastic. Jet shop during a phase, half of jet shops mad at me because I only got two.
That's a good mad. That means it's awesome. Right. And they're loving it.
Right. We have, you know, we have four engine pods. So the, you know, the two don't have it. They're like, man, what's going on? I was like, I didn't want to get four straight out of the gate, because I knew it was not going to be perfect.
Yeah.
So I need to get two. I need to get working. I need to get people on them. I need to get different shops on them. I need to get feedback from everybody, so the next two can be perfect. So, and the guys that use them in jet shop during the phase, I mean, they've shaved days off of their phase.
That's awesome.
Not hours, days, which was, I was expecting hours. And, you know, so it's fantastic.
Good for you. That's awesome.
So, General Saber, you've pretty much seen the epitome of your priorities. Where do you see this going from here? Where do you see this your priority going in the future, man?
So I would love everybody to replicate what he just did. So if we can take that across the NAF, that would be awesome. I think everybody needs to understand that they can make a difference. They can improve things, right? When we innovate, we train better, we fight better, we achieve mission success better, faster, and smarter, right? And ultimately, it leads us to being more lethal, and that's where we want to be. So I encourage every 10th Air Force carnivore to be doing the same thing right now.
And it may not be something as major as what Sergeant Vickers did. I mean, something as simple as changing a form or something like that.
You bet. It spans every mission set, every AFSC we have right now. We can innovate across the NAF everywhere.
Yeah, nothing is too small.
Exactly.
About changing a form or a routing process that cuts out unnecessary steps. It gets us back filing whatever it happens to be that much quicker. Mm-hmm. Nothing is too small.
All right. That's all we have time for in this episode. General Sabrick, Chief Bluto, Tech Sergeant Vickers, thank you so much for being here today. Election season is upon us. Even as reservists and civilians, there are some do's and don'ts. So make sure to tune in to the next episode of Carnivore Nation when we welcome Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Kovac, 10th Air Force Judge Advocate, to help us navigate the somewhat confusing field of regulations and AFIs regarding elections.